Welcome, reanimated fans, to this week's episode. It's been a couple of weeks, but we're jumping back into it. I'm H.A. Conrad, coming to you from Brooklyn, and joined, as always, by my intrepid co-host, Stuart Tiffin, who is on the West Coast. Hello, sir.
Good day. What's up?
You know, it's good. It's good. We're into September now, so, you know, feels like fall is upon us. Hopefully fire season is not upon you yet.
Oh, it is, but, you know, I can just be grateful that the ones that are out there are not, like, mega fires, and there's nothing right now in my county, but there is one in the neighboring county, so just cross your fingers and hope for early rain.
I will. I will indeed. But we are going to be talking about some couple news articles today to take your mind off the fires. And then a recap of episodes four. Is it four and five now of season five?
5B. It's actually like 9 and 10 of the whole season.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, 11 and 12. Second half.
Yeah, I can't
but
even.
But of this second half.
I think it's the third and fourth of the second half, yeah.
Okay. But anyway, jumping into that, but after we go through a couple of the news items for Fear the Walking Dead. This I did see on Twitter and it made me laugh out loud, and I actually had the same reaction when I saw it, but Chandler Riggs apparently put that he was like buying a house, and of course it went back to the meme of many years ago where it's like, where's Carl? He's never in the effing house.
I love that it's the brand that did this to him, though.
The Walking Dead
Twitter account is like, well, he's probably not going to stay in it, though.
And then I did like Chandler Riggs' reaction. He was like, but that was like 8 years ago, man. Which I thought was pretty cute. Anyway, so that was funny. Just in time for Halloween season, Skittles is messing with people. They're putting out Skittles, some of which taste good and some of which taste bad, as they're zombie Skittles, and you don't know which one is which. Very reminiscent of Harry Potter's Bertie Bott's mini flavored beans, where you get vomit flavored beans and that kind of thing.
Has this been done before? It sounds familiar to me.
I feel like they may have done this before, but maybe it was a joke before. I don't know. But in any case, coming to you for this holiday season, and I don't know that this necessarily appeals to me, but I can imagine kids being really into it. You know what I mean?
I mean, if it's just like black licorice flavor, which is gross, but it's not going to be like rotting meat, I might go for it. Actually, no, I wouldn't. I hate black licorice.
Me too. But they also say, you know, that it's supposed to taste like rotting zombie. What that means is kind of, I don't know, that doesn't appeal, but you could see how kids would be into this. So there's
We might have to do the zombie Skittle challenge, H.A., you and me.
Maybe live or recorded, I guess.
Listening to two people eating Skittles on podcast would make such great content.
I think so. All right, we'll put a pause on that and maybe come back to that later. I saw this as well, and I don't know if I would be able to see it in the theaters. It looks like a pretty limited release, but Shudder is actually doing a release of the Japanese film One Cut, and the trailer looks pretty good.
I didn't watch the trailer because the trailer said it had spoilers in it, so it's one of these situations where they say there's a big twist, and there's also one 30-minute long cut or take, and that it's the best zombie movie ever, at least Gizmodo says.
You know, I never listened to those warnings, so I did watch the trailer.
Oh, H.A.
I know. You know, this is where we differ. I don't really care about spoilers, and you do. So, which is why we make such a great team.
Totally.
But it looks like fun. If I get a chance to see it here, I will. But I don't know that you'll get a chance to see it in the theater.
Well, if Shudder's putting it out, they are literally an online streaming content platform. So I'm sure I'll get it. Maybe not in the theater, but in the home theater.
All right. Well, maybe we'll keep an eye on that and see what happens. But it does look like fun. You know, I don't know about comparing it to Shaun of the Dead, but I think it looks fun. And then next up, of course, this was going to be a thing, but Brexit, or sort of a loosely based theme of a show, is going to be coming out. Ben Wheatley, I'm not as familiar with him. It looks like he's like kind of done stuff on that Channel 4, like some other horror stuff. But he's doing a show for Channel 4 called Generation Z, which involves the residents of a retirement home in the UK breaking out and having to be fought off by the new generation. So I guess there is definitely some synergies with or some parallels with the Brexit
on there. What good times. Mm. It's like the nightmare that never ends.
I know. Yeah. But that's all we got for the news today, for the moment.
Four quality pieces of news meet.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're probably ready to jump into these recaps. You wanna tee us up?
Oh, well, certainly. So we're looking, as we said at the top of the show, these are episodes 11 and 12 for the whole season of season 5, and the 3rd and 4th for 5B. Tonight, I think the 13 is airing as we're recording this, so that's kind of where we're at in the timescape. These are called You're Still Here, which was directed by Casey Cowell and written by Mallory Westfall and Alex Delisle. And then there was Nair Tamid, directed by Michael Satrazimus, who was, I think, the showrunner for the next show, maybe? I can't remember who it is, but he's one of those regular directors. And written by the showrunners for this show, Shambliss and Goldberg. And let's dive into You're Still Here without me expressing my feelings about these overall yet. You're Still Here is a pretty Alicia-heavy story, with also some Morgan and Al, and some a new character whose name is what, Wes or something like that.
Wes.
Yeah.
But we've seen him. We saw him. He is the man of the motorbike with the sidecar that got shot up by Logan in his game earlier on at the truck stop. He's the one who was watching their big story videos.
Yeah, and he's the one who was quite dismissive of their message, at least to Logan. He suggested that you're all a bunch of idiots, or you're all selling a bill of goods that I'm not interested in.
Correct. So I don't know, like, this, once again, like, one thing overall, just, as you know, this just drives me nuts in general. They're using the walkie-talkies again a lot to communicate between, like, different characters, and they do it both in this episode and the next episode, and, you know, it's a device that I just really have to say, once again, is really sloppy in terms of storytelling. To me, there's just like a lot of convenient stuff. Like suddenly they say something on the walkie and Logan's team can track them down in a heartbeat. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that ambush, it feels the ambush a little that happens in this episode is bananas. That Logan is there's so many reasons that it is a weird, bad scene, but yeah.
It just feels it's a little too convenient. And I feel like this is one of my biggest issues with this season or not even this season, I guess the last couple of seasons, in terms of, like, I get that you want to have the characters having different things going on, and this is a way to tie things together, have them communicate. And I guess you could have some of that, but so much seems to hang on whether somebody says something on the walkie. And the funniest thing to me, which doesn't happen in this particular episode, in the next one, it's like somebody actually says, so-and-so is breaking radio silence. And it's like, well, they do that all the time. You just happen to say it out loud at this point. Yeah. Did you also laugh at that? Because I was just like, what? Really? This is not exactly unusual. You guys do it every day pretty much. So,
yep.
I don't know.
So major issues with this episode include also Alicia's ongoing inability to fight the undead, which we haven't seen yet in this series or the other one, I feel like. When somebody is perfectly good, in fact, like excellent at killing the zombies one day, then has zombie blood go in their face, and the next day they're like, oh, no, I can't do it. You gross.
Well, this also seems weird to me, given all the stuff that she's been through. Yeah. And if they are going to go there, maybe they can talk a little bit more about why she's so traumatized by this, but it doesn't seem to match up with what we know about her and what she's experienced so far, that this would have such a traumatic effect.
To me, it just it smacks of a plot device. It's just filler. It's just like, oh, you know what? We could spend an episode and a half or even two episodes talking about how Alicia is having this problem with killing zombies all of a sudden. And it just creates these scenes where it's like, oh, Strand, save me from the one zombie. What am I going to do? And he has to, and it's just, yeah, it's
annoying.
It defangs this character who we need to be tough. This is just, I feel like I keep bringing this up with other things, other characters on this show under these showrunners like Luciana. They've taken characters who were really good at taking care of themselves, and either they make them permanently useless, like in the case of Luciana, or borderline, or temporarily in the case of Alicia in this episode. And I don't understand why they feel like that's good for the story.
Well, it also doesn't escape me that these were your two strongest female characters, save Madison anyway.
Yeah.
And I find it weird that this is the direction they're going in with both of them. You do have flaws with other characters like Morgan and that kind of thing, but you're not seeing it. You know, and Morgan was going through weird stuff at one point similar to this. So I guess you could say they're kind of like riding those coattails a little bit, but or drawing some, they want you to draw that parallel, but it's not quite the same thing. And it didn't go on, I don't know, like the way, even in the way that they have her reacting to different things, it's like, why would she be out there doing this? This doesn't even make sense. And the one thing I do like about the whole thing with her and Strand on the road is that there's definitely, like, their relationship together, I think, is pretty nice. I do like how they support each other, and how they've become allies, almost in the way Strand was with Madison. So that's something that I do think is a positive thing, but I really dislike what they've done with her character in this particular instance. And she's out there on the road, just as a reminder, going to look for the people who are, or person that's writing on the trees, these inspirational messages about still being here.
Yeah,
if you're reading this, you're still here.
Right. And we had first seen this when, I'm forgetting all their names all of a sudden. John Dory and Dwight were trying to come back from looking for Sherry. And so this is in the area where it's inaccessible Texas, right? This is the area that they had to fly into and out of, that there's no way to get between these two parts of Texas. So that's the first place we saw this. And John was like, had an epiphany when he saw the tree originally and was like, we can go back and find your wife's van. And then they found it and saved the day. And now we're seeing it in this other part of Texas. And this is where Alicia has seen them, I assume for the first time, but it seems to suggest that she has seen multiple of these trees during this episode. Whereas we think she's only seen the one, but maybe they're seeing more off camera.
I feel like she's been seeing more. That's sort of implied.
But this,
because she does talk about the person painting the trees, plural.
Yes,
so,
she talks about that.
You know.
But this is a major thorn in the side of this season, where they created this geographically cut off part of the world for this major plot device in the season 5A. And then they have multiple other characters being able to traverse this area. Dwight obviously had driven into that part of Texas in season 5A, right? Sherry had apparently driven in and out of it somehow, or maybe died there. Now they seem to suggest that whoever was painting these trees, which we find out who that is in this episode, has also managed to drive into and out of that area. And so
it's a little mysterious.
Mysterious or sloppy. You take your pick.
But that's not shocking given how this has been going.
I mean, should we just say that that's okay, though? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know that we should say it's okay, but I mean, I guess you can. I don't know. I guess you could really reach and think that maybe Sherry and some others had gotten there before the roads got so mucked up. I mean, but I agree with you. I do think it's like very sloppy storytelling. But they have to tie it together somehow, so I guess we just have to accept it and move on. But in any case, Alicia and Strand run into Wes. He basically says he saw their tapes. He also says he ran to Logan, so he's not keeping that, you know, hidden from them, but says he has to go and get back to his brother. And you know, it's weird because it's like, how far did he get the bike? How did he get the bike as far as even where they found him? Because he's a fair distance from the truck stop. And that was shot up to the level that I don't think it would have been even movable.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be able to push it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of weird where they found him once again, a little bit of a hole in the plot. And then he says he has to get back to his brother because his brother would have thought he would have turned into a walker or like whatever he calls it, an eater by now. So they jovially go along, and you have a little bit of back and forth with him, talking to them about the tapes. And that kind of thing.
More of this, like, oh, I know exactly who you are because of the tapes stuff. Mm. And Alicia admits to him that she's looking for these trees or these paintings which she had done on the videotape. And he's like, why? She's like, I want to see the world like they do. It's like, whatever, lady, you're crazy.
Well, and also he's like, it's paint. And I also thought at that moment that he knew who had done them, if he had not done them himself. But in any case, they go to this place wherever his brother might be, and it's not his brother. It's in fact somebody who took something from him, and he shoots him. And this guy kind of runs and steals their truck very easily for a man who's walking with like a belly wound.
They just leave the truck running apparently also, and the keys in there. So they're at it like a sheriff's station, but it's really rural. Like, who puts a sheriff's department on a T intersection in the middle of a bunch of agricultural fields? I'm not sure. Usually they're around population centers, but you know, put that aside. And then this is a really well equipped still for this 2 years plus into the zombie apocalypse sheriff.
It's got station. Riot gear. It's got sorts
sitting
sorts
in
of
unlocked
stuff.
Patrol cars. Yeah, riot gear sitting in duffel bags. It's got boxes of ammunition, and it doesn't other than maybe this one guy who's obsessed with books. Because you notice, did you see any of the titles? He has some John Scalzi science fiction in there.
That's not the first time Scalzi has appeared in this series.
Oh, really?
No, there's been a few others where like they've had his books around, so somebody must be a Scalzi fan.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty, like, it's interesting. This is the only dude there, apparently, in this very well-equipped little station. So
bizarre.
I find it interesting that Wes would run in there with sort of blind almost. I don't know.
I mean, like, if he's the only person there, it's out in the middle of nowhere. He must have heard the truck roll up. Unless he just, There's a lot of things that are weird about this. But, yeah, Wes is just on this mission to take him out. Because Wes, as the story unfolds, is really cynical about people, even though he just accepted a ride and called them for a ride from two other human people who he doesn't know how they're going to respond to him attacking this one guy. And he knows that they're Good Samaritans. So I feel like he's inviting calamity upon himself with this.
Well, it's also weird to me that he would even come up with this cover story about the brother. Like, if this is what his intention was, just have them drop you off down the road.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And then you can walk the
rest
of the
way. So it's just kind of strange that this, again, to me, a sloppy storytelling. There's many ways that you could have played this. I guess maybe there's some implication that maybe there's an underlying thing that he was thinking. I think that we were supposed to potentially think that Logan and his folks were there and it was set up a trap, if you will. But it wasn't, which makes it even more confusing. and ultimately the motivation for Wes going and getting this guy, and then, I mean, this is the whole thing. So, like, Alicia and Strand see that the guy's hurt. The guy goes away, and they say to Wes, oh, we got to get him and make sure he's okay. Well, clearly he's not okay. Like, he's gotten shot, and they need to get their truck or whatever. And this is when they break radio silence, which is weird. Like they suddenly get trapped into this station, which a bit of it's self-inflicted, and you know, there's like that weird tear gas thing that happens with Strand, which also seems strange to me. Like the whole thing just seems really, I mean, again, it's a zombie show. It seems so far-fetched.
I spent a fair amount of time Googling, do they even make shotgun shells with tear gas in them? Because generally those are deployed with a 40 millimeter grenade type round. And I guess they do make them, but I don't think they make them like that. It goes out more like a cone, like a spray from the end of the shotgun, from what I understood. And it's also considered exotic ammunition. And
I think that's what I was going to say. Probably, would it really be out in this area?
Probably a lot harder to find. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're also shooting beanbags, which I thought was also pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, about time they came up with some weird shotgun ammunition for this show, am I right?
Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, like, so they're there and they're, you know, it seems like the main point of all of this is to have them in a room discussing their various philosophies together. You know, just trying to, like, build some of this character stuff, but I just don't know that it doesn't necessarily, I mean, you kind of get the same stuff you got before. Like, Alicia and Strand are like, oh, we got to help that guy, and then they tell Wes why they should help that guy. Wes is like, no, people are dirt. And then they break radio silence because they're like, you got to get this injured man because we can't get to him. Huh? So now you're going to, like...
Every life is precious.
So now you're going to, like... Well, you're now going to, like, let... Give your... Now... But it's interesting because they've basically given their location away.
Yeah.
So there's that.
But as it turns out, that's not such a big deal because also Logan and his group are not that bad. Like, what do they even do? Like, okay, so let's back up. Althea and Morgan have gone to a bank, or Morgan has caught up to Al at a bank after he snubs Grace's advances to the mall episode. And she's like, hey, you didn't have to be here. I could have done this by myself. And do you remember what happened the last time Al went off by herself?
Yeah, so I think Morgan's right in this, that she shouldn't be out there on her own.
Nobody should be doing solo missions.
Nobody should be, and especially not solo missions that involve this stuff. I mean, I will tell you, I got a little bit like, oh gosh, like they get into the bank vault, she manages, she somehow has the combination, because she knew the bank manager, uh-huh.
Yep, she did a story on the bank manager, and he gave her the combination to the bank safe. That's how
Because that's what you would do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Anyway, so they do this, and even as she's opening the door, I'm just like, I guess I was kind of thinking that Logan and them would lock them in or something, but at least Morgan had the good sense to stand outside of the vault while this was happening. But it's also this whole idea that they're going to put their tapes here, and she knows all this stuff about this bank, like all the requirements, all the things that are happening with it, that this will keep their stuff safe.
Yeah.
So that was kind of weird. And then she gives Morgan a hard time about why he's there with her, and he, of course, doesn't tell her, and so there's all that.
Example, though, of Althea's obsession with taping and putting stuff on video coming back to bite them later.
Yeah, because they've basically given all of their private stories away, and it's used as leverage. We saw it being used against Dwight before, now Morgan... Logan and Morgan and Althea run into each other because they're running to try to find the wounded man and get waylaid by Logan, who also alludes to the like reasons why he needs the gas and that it's a much bigger than everybody, like, you know, that kind of storyline.
At least they address, like, when Logan brings up the wife and kid, which Morgan has stupidly talked about on the tape, Logan's like, hey, if you don't want people in your business, don't put it on TV. Like, no dir. And Althea eventually, like, apologizes. She's like, I shouldn't have put that in the documentary, I think she calls it. I'm like, that's not a documentary, lady. That was an ad for medicine.
That is propaganda.
And Morgan's like, no, I forget what his response was. But he's like, no, I did it. I knew I was doing it or something. But, oh, so dumb. But then, what did Logan's crew do to Morgan and Al? Nothing. They waylay them. Morgan and Al kind of go back and forth to their car, make some more radio calls, but nothing happened. Like, do we even see how that situation gets resolved? Do they just turn around and drive away?
I guess they just drive away, and you know, that's it.
What was the point of that?
No point, other than to show that I guess Logan has cat-like. Or I should say bat-like sonar or something to tell exactly where people are going to go at any given time, and manages to get there with a big rig and other vehicles really quickly, within minutes or whatever. Like, that's the other ridiculous part of this. It's not exactly like they're in places that are super close together. This is like, this is out in, you know, rural Texas. And I just think it's crazy that they manage to pinpoint them so easily and so quickly all the time. Because you know what? Even if you're talking on a walkie-talkie, it's really hard to, like, without somebody saying exactly where they are, maybe you have some sense of, like, within a range of miles, but you're not going to be able to pinpoint them, certainly not in, like, the country.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's maybe we're working with a much smaller land area than I'm thinking, but even so, it just seems it just totally ridiculous. I mean, so
unless Morgan and Al were giving away way more of their information than they needed to, but that wouldn't make sense because they know the stakes, right? So I mean, it's one thing for Alicia and Strand to say, "Hey, we're at the something Lafay Sheriff Station. Can you help us get this guy?" They could say, "Yeah, we're not far from there. We can come get it." Or like, "Oh, we're in a bank vault in X town, and we can still get there." Even if they had said that, how would he know which route they were going to take between the two points? It's not like everything is connected by straight lines.
Right. I mean, unless they said what road that dude was going on exactly and what road they were going to take.
Which, how could they know? Because they were, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, super frustrating. That's
totally a frustrating thing, as is the whole idea of putting those tapes up again in a vault, which, by the way, of course, Logan and his team eventually find. And they're looking for something else in that vault, but they find the tapes, which are conveniently there and not locked up at all.
Vault door off, which is a big deal. What were they looking for? How did they know to go there?
Well, exactly. And also, well, I think this was somehow known to Polar Bear. That's sort of what Logan implies. But also, Althea goes through all this trouble to, like, put the tapes in there. She just puts them in, doesn't even close the little door, doesn't, like, lock the key just in case. I mean, I guess they think nobody else has access, but you don't know that.
No,
so
I guess.
It just feels a little crazy given how much value she places on these damn tapes. You know, I was actually hoping Logan would just torch the thing.
Oh my God, that would be great. But awesome. We see them again in the next episode, unfortunately. They're on the dashboard of his truck at the end of the episode. So that was just freaking annoying. Strand is trying to save the day back at the sheriff station, despite having tear gas in his eyes, and kind of does a decent job, but really it's Wes who saves the day. They manage to get out of the sheriff station, and they eventually track down the guy. And that interaction is also confounding and upsetting. He's like, "Oh, you stole my book? Oh, that was your manuscript? Oh, that was really good stuff. Really good stuff." And then he dies.
Yeah, and then Wes is like, "Oh, he died for it. I'm going to leave it." So after all that, he leaves it?
He doesn't even care after all that. Yeah, I mean,
which is also, I don't know, like, okay, so if the guy stole the manuscript, like, Wes has to, I mean, this isn't like he stole it thinking that there was other stuff that was valuable in there. He stole books. The guy stole books. So Wes has to know that this guy is reading or, like, whatever. Like, why not have a conversation with the guy rather than shoot him? Because if the guy is stealing books, it's not like he's stealing supplies. You know what I mean? Like, this is kind of a weird reaction for Wes to have. And again, I think it's one of those things that they're trying to build up, obviously, about the storyline about Wes's brother and why he's so cynical.
It's how you know that he's not just motivated by survival, man. He's got deeper things going on. But it's that they just toss it to the side as soon as you realize what the nature of his need is, some connection with his past. But then once he finds it, he throws it away. And then you're like, what was the point of any of this?
Right. We just spent this whole show chasing down this guy. And then, you know, he goes off after, like, spitting nasty words back at Alicia. He goes wandering off again. And Alicia suddenly has, like, this epiphany. And she reads the manuscript. The end of it says, "If you're reading this, you're still here," and realizes that Wes probably wrote this or something. And then starts painting a tree of her own.
And then Wes finds that tree and circle complete. Except we haven't still seen Wes come back onto the show. Maybe we will. They're not together. He's walked off by himself. Morgan, Al, Strand, and Alicia don't appear in the next episode, right? They're off. They're apparently coming back from this mission by the time the next episode begins.
So this was what was unclear to me. It seems like Wes saw another one of the trees, not her tree.
Her tree. No, I'm pretty sure it was her tree.
No, because it didn't have blue on it and didn't have the weird bird. It was the same things that we've seen, just the white paint.
Well, maybe she'd been doing more than one.
Maybe, but I don't think so. I think maybe his brother was the one who was painting the trees.
Oh my god! Apparently, there was a fan theory that it was Madison Clark painting the trees before we met Wes, which I don't know why anybody would think that, except that they want Kim Dickens to come back to the show, but I'm pretty sure Kim Dickens has washed her hands of this show at this point.
Oh, I think she has. I actually thought it might be Sherry at some point mm-hmm. painting the trees, but so there's that.
I'd give that episode a D-.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. But the next one is almost worse.
The next one, it does have some problematic areas and some stuff that's very derivative. But it does introduce a new character / actor. And that person is Jacob Kestner. Rabbi. But what's his actual actor name?
Oh, his actor name? See, I just know him from House.
He was also in Colony, where he was an amazing bad guy.
Yeah, he's a good actor. I really like him. And weirdly enough, one day I ran into him on the Acela, and I was like, he's just easily recognizable. Like, he is really just Peter Jacobson is the actor. And he, you know, just kind of one of those guys that's in so many things. I think he's a great actor, though.
Yeah, he was fantastic. In Colony, he was like the regional governor. He was basically like the worst collaborator. I don't know. Did you ever see that show?
I watched the first few episodes. I never got into it, though.
So it was, you know, Sarah Wayne Callies and Sawyer from Lost and some kids. It was really good. It was a shame that it got canceled after, I think, 3 seasons. But yeah, so this guy, he's like the lone survivor. There's a lot of parallels here with Father Gabriel, obviously. I'm not sure, maybe in an apocalypse, people would flock, you know, believers would flock to their temples and churches, making these community leaders, priests and rabbis, de facto community leaders for post-apocalyptic communities. And unfortunately, in both cases that we have seen now in the Walking Dead universe, they are not very good at it.
Well, they're both people who have lost faith. So
they've lost their congregations, due perhaps in fault to their own failings.
Though in Gabriel's case, he was a little bit more directly involved.
He just straight up locked them out, right?
Whereas Kestner left and came back, and they were kind of like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That said, I did like his introduction here. I thought it was pretty, like, I think he's a great actor. So I think that it is just, I don't know, like in terms of his performance, it's a very strong performance. You immediately, at least I felt like, oh, this is like a character. And of course, you knew that there was going to be some plot point like that, something, because it, of course, that's just what's going to happen. But he's so clear and direct, and Charlie ends up at his temple, and
that. I mean, this is a big problem for this episode. That why Charlie went off by herself.
Yeah,
the fact really not why, but the fact that she went off by herself. Like, she doesn't have a relationship now. By this point with June and John, where she can be honest with them and say, I want to send out a scout party to find a place where we can live, as opposed to this weird, like, convoy every night, never stopping anywhere.
Yeah, but she's never going to say anything to any of them and just take off. It's kind of dumb.
Like, that's a complete, you know, broach of trust, breach. And so,
Well, and it's also, I also kind of feel like Daniel's always kind of keep an eye out on her. And I just don't think, I don't buy that any convoy where he's on it is going to leave without knowing where she is. So that bothered me. But anyway, I mean, she finds this temple. She finds Jacob Kestner. He continues to go through his daily rituals and prayers. And, you know, I like him as an actor so much, which is what kind of saved the episode for me.
Correct.
Once again, you know, they go on the walkie-talkies, and Charlie alerts June and John Dory to her location because they need a battery to keep the lights on, or to keep the god lamp on, so to speak. And again, like, Logan and his team managed to figure out where the convoy is hiding, though it seems as if maybe they've gotten this information somehow through the tapes. That's sort of implied. But, like, it's just, like, this weird thing where, so it's like, you know, and then Charlie and them eventually discover, or Jacob Kestner reveals that his whole congregation are walkers and they're locked into this room, and he reveals his lack of faith and all that stuff. There's a lot of, like, things between John, Dory, and June, and how June's looking for a place and how she's going to know. And there's, like, a lot of, which we've seen throughout this season, just a lot of, like, just not, like, sort of mystical statements by characters about faith.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, John Dory is like, oh, June, you know, you're going to know where it is, and all sorts of stuff. And so, and they've left, like, a lot of places behind that would have been suitable. It seems also a little bit crazy that they're setting up this convoy every freaking night. It's a lot of work to set up that kind of camp. And if you know you're just going to go the next morning, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sleep in the cars. But,
yeah.
I don't know. What were your thoughts on that? It just seems insane to me.
Like you said, they've left behind plenty of appropriate sites. I mean, literally the mill where they started this season had a river next to it. Like, if you want, if it's running water or clean water that you're looking for, just go back to the mill. It was apparently defensible enough that they were holding it before Logan showed up, and Logan was able to hold it against, albeit it was just Sarah and Wendell and Strand and them at the beginning of the season. But yeah, just go back to the mill. This doesn't have to be this crazy thing. But
also, even though the mill is trashed, it's still got a bunch of space, and you could probably, like, recuperate some of that stuff. So it just seems a little weird to me that this is them just going around. And apparently Logan's ability to pinpoint them at in a heartbeat doesn't really make sense if the whole reason you're moving around is so that they don't find you, but yet you continue to reveal your locations and they find you in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
it just seems kind of crazy. And so indeed, Logan's team finds Sarah in the convoy. And they go and drive around a lot. They drive around. They leave all their supplies.
They leave all their tents and stuff, and then just all drive in different directions, apparently. But because at some point, the tanker truck ends up by itself and runs out of gas, which is also not a great survival technique. Yeah, that's when we also find out that Dwight's little buddy has shown up again. Did we have a bet on that?
Yep.
Well, he went back to the bad guy team. Big surprise. And but then they just kind of lurk around like a bunch of creepers until, well, I guess June and John show up at the end of the episode and save the day. In the meantime, June and John had gone to the, like you said, they went to the synagogue. They talked to Charlie about how this is not going to work, and then do this weird ladder escape once his congregation all escape from containment, which he did not have them locked up very well. There was a whole panel held on by tiny pieces of wire. That they were apparently
a glass door that apparently was holding up until this point, which seems a little implausible.
That's just how that works, right?
Yep.
It's this episode was kind of frustrating. Like you said, the only saving grace is Jacob Kestner character. He might be a good new addition to the team. He might also get a little tired if he's gonna keep talking about Hashem calls, and I'm just gonna be like, okay, buddy. It turns out Sarah is also Jewish. That's great. But I don't know. I'm a little bit gun shy about them introducing a new, like, religious element to the show.
Me too. But you know, we'll see what happens with that. Especially somebody who's lost his faith but just continues to kind of go through the motions, though I think that is a commentary, probably, obviously, about religion in general. But then the other part of this episode that they kept trying to build was the relationship between Sarah and Dwight. She keeps calling him, like, what, baby face angel or something weird.
Yeah.
And they talk to each other a lot, or, like, they have a lot of weird interactions, like, almost building a relationship that we haven't been really seeing being built, but you're now supposed to assume that's it's there. Interesting, we have not seen Wendell for a long time.
Well, he's with the kids, who we also haven't seen. In the oil refinery, and I guess we're going to see them tonight.
Yeah, I guess tonight. So anyway, so that's all happening. The last scene is with Logan about to break into the oil refinery. Would this group be so dumb as to reveal this location in tapes? Like, come on. Like, this is all dumb. Well, anyway.
The dumbness of it is no longer, unfortunately, surprising since they decided to do this whole video element.
Yeah.
The showrunners must have known. I mean, they're like, this is their Achilles heel. They can't help but admit everything they're doing in the interest of transparency. And I'm just like, this is so dumb.
Mm, it's pretty bad. But anyway, this episode
gets a D+.
But I don't know. I'm kind of excited to see Wendell tonight. I hope they show a lot more of Jacob Kessner. I'm kind of liking him. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. That's all I got. What about you?
I unfortunately don't have anything else either. Hopefully, Charlie stays in the house next time, or in the convoy until they find a house.
She's the new Chandler Riggs, definitely. I suppose.
Let's hope that the next couple episodes, they don't have much time left to turn this season around, because so far I think this has been a dumpster fire.
Yep, agreed. But we'll continue to reveal it with glee, or review it with glee.
And they also really need to have some character deaths on this show. Mm-hmm. They've been adding characters this season. They have not erased anybody. Nobody has been killed.
Well, I'm assuming that that's what's going to happen and why Logan's team is so big and why we have like a few faceless people in their convoy.
We've got 30, like 40 people now in the convoy, but also just in terms of people as characters, with speaking roles. This is why so many people haven't been on the show every episode. Their cast is now enormous. They need to kill some people off.
By the way, 36 people in their convoy because 36 righteous people, as Jacob Kessner reminded us.
But does that count people with speaking roles?
I guess. I don't know. But anyway, I guess you got to kill off some of those righteous people in this particular series pretty soon.
Yeah, because at least one, Eric Kane from Forbes was saying nobody has died on this show since Madison Clark. Does that make sense? No, that can't be right. At least as
that's not true.
Nobody has died. But what brother?
You know, her brother died.
Her brother. Yeah, Nick. So Nick died, but that was before or after Madison. And that season was all those time jumps I don't remember anymore. I guess it was, But you're right, Nick did die post-Madison. But has there been a single other character death?
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's a long time to go without a character death.
True. I mean, the only ones that have died was like the security guy that we only met and he died in the same day. And that's it. So I guess We got to see what happens. I'm sure they're holding it all out. I'm sure there will be something with Grace, because they got to make Morgan hurt a little bit more.
Put Morgan through some more pain. Yeah.
Pretty sure that's what it's going
to
be.
They have to stop hiring these like charismatic, great actors, but then they give them kind of crappy roles. But, you know, like if you hired some more D and F listers, we wouldn't be so sad when they get killed off the show. But I guess that's...
Yeah, it just makes me sad that they're not... I don't feel like they're utilizing her to the best of her talents, but that seems to be the case. In any case, if you have comments about these couple of episodes and this season in general, feel free to shoot us an email at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at us, reanimatedpcast is the handle. Or just leave a note on the site, reanimatedpodcast.com.
Cross your fingers the rest of the season Fear the Walking Dead improves, because it's bringing me down.
We'll try to be on next week. It's still TBD, but if not, we'll review the next couple episodes.
Cool beans.
After that. So, all right. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Till then, ciao.
Bye-bye.